ready to record. Oh, yeah. You saved your cough for that, right? As I hit record?
Yeah, here you go. So, yeah, I haven't played the first XCOM, new XCOM remake, I guess. I don't think I played it since, was it on PlayStation?
I played it on PC. I would never play a game like that on console.
Yeah, I wasn't into PC gaming when I had that. So it must have been PlayStation.
Okay. Yeah, you've been a PC gamer for pretty much as long as I've known you, I feel.
Well, yeah, but that's... I haven't had a rig since... Well, I don't think I had a proper rig until, like, 99, 2000-ish.
Oh, dude, you rigged so outdated.
It wasn't even good, though. It wasn't even good then. it was capable of playing Diablo.
One. Well, yeah. 99.
And then I think I got a new...
You got a new graphics card. Video card,
so I could play Diablo 2.
Yeah. But you got a graphics card for Diablo 3, I thought.
D3 didn't really need much.
Yeah.
I had my newest rig by the time I got Diablo 3, so.
Okay. And by newest rig, you mean laptop, or were you still...
I think the laptop is the newest one.
Yeah.
And it's not that powerful. You know, I can play D3, I can play...
Powerful enough.
I can't play any of the stuff you play.
Well, obviously.
No, not even a little bit. I could probably play XCOM.
I was going to say strategy games aren't demanding graphically, but it's not what makes them demanding. I know a game like Rome Total War just will bring a PC to its knees if you don't have like a quad core 3, you know, gigahertz or higher. It just needs raw processing.
Yeah, I got that covered. Even the laptop I have is an i7, so it should be all right.
Yeah, they slapped i7s in like everything. It became ubiquitous, which is great. It's a great chip, don't get me wrong. It impresses me that nowadays, it used to be that, do you remember when gaming laptops were a thing, like were new?
Just sort of vaguely.
Like Alienware came out with one. It was a 17-inch screen. Yeah. It was a beast. It had to be. I think they tried to be like, well, look how big the screen is. When meanwhile, they're thinking, we need the footprint that big because we need to jam so much hardware into it.
And that's legitimate.
Well, at the time. But now you can have a discrete mobile NVIDIA top-of-the-line graphics card.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. You still need some space. If you're going to have a gaming laptop, and you might as well get like 16 or 17 inch anyway.
I don't think they're as common as they were. I
feel like
Are they still around? Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm actually not in that scene at all. So.
Oh yeah, I forget what mine is. I don't know if mine's 17 or not. It might be.
I feel like it's 15.
Could be.
I've glanced at it. 17 is just too big for a normal laptop. Like you notice it.
Yeah.
It's like when a dude has a 12-inch penis, it's hard to hide it, you know? I mean, you know what I mean.
I know.
We saw that
state skit finally together.
Yeah, that's what I was referencing. I'm not saying you have a massive penis. I'm just saying that, you know, when a guy has a 12-inch penis, you notice it. When a nerd has a 17-inch laptop, you can't help but be like, why is it so big? And you kind of say out the side of your mouth, like, why is it so big?
17's not that bad. I think you can even get like 19 or higher laptops, and that's where it starts getting crazy.
That's just strap a shuttle PC on your back and wear some VR goggles at that point. Jesus. Did I ever tell you about the RIT party I went to?
Oh, I don't know. I went to one too. Not as even an RIT student, as like it was just sort of an open land party that I went to.
Oh, wow, that's hardcore. Well, this was the discussion. Well, I'll tell my story first.
Okay.
Hi, we are buddies in space. You are.
S. Michael Smith, you are.
And Michael Carassi. And we are nerding out.
Yeah, we're nerding out. We're going to nerd out even more. And this is going to be heavy nerdcore night.
Okay.
Because I brought nerd stuff, too.
Did you bring, like, PC Gamer Mag? I thought I recognized the specific gloss level and paper weight of a PC gamer magazine.
Oh, you might be right. You might be wrong. You might be close. Don't know.
I might be cloned.
You might be way off. You might be cloned.
What?
You're watching Clone Wars now, and you're becoming a big fan of it. You have become a big fan of it, from what I hear.
I'm a big fan of it. My 2.5-year-old is a big fan of it.
Is it done, though?
Oh, it's been done for years, yeah. The jury's still out on am I a bad father for letting him watch it? Because I don't know what's coming. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't be like, kind of questionably violent. I don't want you to watch it. I don't know that's going to happen. So
I think they end before Anakin kills everyone. So
he is definitely done some shit that I'm like, interesting. You are not a good person right now. Like, they do a really...
They kind of walk the line between him being like a heroic character and like
way crossing the line to get things done. But it's always to get things done. It's like literally the embodiment of the path to hell is paved with good intentions. Like they stick to that. But cartoon is very well done. Actually, I have something else to tell you about Star Wars Rebels that I found out today.
All right. So you did watch a little bit of Rebels now?
Or? Oh, I'm all caught up.
Oh, okay.
Because I read an article that was talking about how it might lead into some stuff with Episode 7. They had some theories. They were wrong. But I was like, I should check this cartoon out just in case. Now it turns out
Simon's not into it, though. Simon's not into Rebels.
Yeah, same kind of animation. It doesn't have stormtroopers. Because mm-hmm. he met a bunch of stormtroopers at Comic-Con. And Archie, that is what he loves.
He's imprinted on stormtroopers.
Very much. We asked him tonight, do you like the Jedi or the stormtroopers more? He goes, stormtroopers.
Good. That's good.
Well, they're not all bad now. When we were young, they were only bad stormtroopers. Now there's good clones, and they turn bad later, but he doesn't know that. And then there's Finn. There's people in those suits. He's still convinced it's robots. And then in Episode 7, you see a dude.
That's going to be hard to explain.
He hasn't even gotten to that point yet, yeah. But we're very clear on that no one dies. Everyone just gets knocked out unless you're a robot, and then it's okay because they're not real.
Right.
But I saw the trailer for season 3 of Rebels, and A, it looks fucking awesome, because the main kid is going dark. I mean, everyone's always known he's just going to turn bad by the end, because Darth Maul's in it.
Oh.
Because Darth Maul's alive, because of space magic.
When does it take place chronologically?
This is probably just before Rogue One, now that you have to insert that. So this is the very, the characters, some, and there's a lot of crossover actually with Clone Wars, which is cool. But the characters form the beginning of the rebellion. The very, very beginning.
Okay.
So Vader's in it. Palpatine hasn't been. But what's really cool is they just revealed that Admiral Thrawn is going to be in it. Now, what's interesting about that, it's okay if you don't know what that is.
I have no idea.
That's fine. So, okay, we're going full on nerd here. But I'm sure you'll explain. I will fucking explain the shit out of that. I love Admiral Thrawn. So, again, I read many of the early Star Wars books that are no longer canon. I've let that go. But they will not let me let that go, and here's why. Timothy Zahn wrote the best books of all of them. It was very early on. It was it kind of picked up right after Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. So he was the one who established the universe that kind of created everything else.
Okay.
Expanding universe-wise.
Yep.
And he introduced this former Imperial alien named Admiral Thrawn. And it was really weird. It's like, why is this guy, he's one of an oppressed species. Why is he serving the Empire? But he's like a brilliant tactician. And so he like doesn't punish his men if they are outsmarted. You know, he's like a really interesting character, and he makes a good foil for them. He's a really great villain. I think they end up all teaming up because, of course, they had to introduce a bigger threat, you know, later in the book series. But Admiral Thrawn is, if any older Star Wars fan is like, yeah, he's the shit. So I assumed he was just gone because, you know, the expanding universe is no more. But he's in Rebels,
mm-hmm.
which is fucking awesome. So you have Darth Maul starting to tutor Ezra, and his Jedi master is like blind now, so that's all weird. And then you have Ahsoka's back, and she had a face-off with Vader at the end of the last season. You don't know how that played out. And then Admiral Thrawn's in it now, working with Vader, and it's like, what's going on here, man? This is crazy shit.
Wow.
Yeah, it's, you know, from a nerd perspective, very exciting. And Rogue One, you know, has a character that was in Clone Wars. Forrest Whitaker's playing Saw Gerrera, who was a later Clone Wars character. So he's like, at Star Wars, I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Okay.
But it's funny to hear someone as like, the guy who played King of Scotland, you know, like a very legitimate actor say, yeah, I went back and I rewatched all the Clone Wars episodes with my character in it again and again to get a sense of it. And it's like, you watched a cartoon for research. That's nice. Awesome.
What a good excuse.
Right? What a great cartoon.
So what are we drinking here?
So this is, do you get a hint of something other than the pineapple?
Not really.
Darn it.
Not really, and because pineapple is such a strong, pineapple is pineapple. Anything you put in with pineapple is going to taste like pineapple. Yeah. Except probably for that Chinese stuff we're going to have next time.
I would not want to mix Chinese fire water with that. Yeah. Well, because we're having that, because we had crazy chartreuse drinks last time.
And yeah.
We're
doing Chinese fire water this time. That was overwhelming.
Yeah. You had to hang out afterwards.
I did. Yeah. That was potent stuff.
It was good. That root beer drink was really good.
It was pretty good.
That's going to be my, like, I need to impress someone with weird mixology. There you go.
But yeah, and pineapple is a thing that you always, I remember from when I was in college, you would put pineapple in with anything, mm-hmm. and there's your punch. There's the base of your punch, and people will not taste alcohol in it.
That's true. I mean, you can barely, there's a decent amount of alcohol in this. But
not tasting it.
The other night when we were, I feel like you always say that. There is no alcohol in this. The other night when we were hanging out, Erica wanted me to make her a drink. So I took her whipped cream. Why are you looking behind me like there's a serial killer? Oh, okay.
Oh. Also, go on. No. Anytime I look to my left right now, okay. It's going to be exaggerated because I had a terrible night last night.
Aww.
I am running on very little sleep. I had one of my tension headaches last night, and it just keeps me up. And the what usually does the trick is Excedrin migraine, which has caffeine in it.
Ah.
I ended up taking three of them, and it still didn't quite kick its ass. So I was up basically all night and having a bad night. I did get a little bit of sleep, but it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
It was weird and uncomfortable. And now I can barely turn my head to the left. There you go. There's my personal health update. Not to complain, because
Film
other
11.
People, I think I'm pretty lucky in this. I know other people have much worse stuff.
You could
I get headaches
mom's
once
shit.
In a while, yeah. And, you know, I'll take it.
Well, your leg injury is, you know, that went away.
Yeah,
so.
But I can still walk around. I'm still good.
No, I mean, it's gone. Yeah.
Like yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good for you. Way to not be American. Way to not complain incessantly at your first world problems. But I only in recent years I've started to have neck issues from sleep.
It
just must come with age. I actually alternate now. So one night I have a gel pad.
Mm-hmm.
So one night I'll sleep just on a pad, which is almost no pillow at all. And then the other night I'll sleep with the pad on a pillow. And I found that alternating prevents neck injury.
Huh. All sleep. Right.
But I don't think many people can sleep without a pillow. It's just random.
Nah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't even know how I sleep anymore.
Well, and
I have a couple of pillows and they get mushed around and I wake up and like, you know, one's on top of my head and another one's on the floor. I don't know what happened here.
I'm still convinced that I ate a pillow one night as a kid. I swear to God, I had a dream that I was eating a giant marshmallow and I woke up and I never found that pillow. And logic says that should not be possible. And part of me knows it's not possible, but I still deep down think that I ate a pillow. And I also know that I think it was also a Bazooka Joe comic with the same gag, so I probably just got it from that. But
let's hope so.
Yeah. That explains my weight issues. I did want to tell you this RIT story really quick.
Okay.
So I was in a very interesting interpretation of Macbeth, and I played Malcolm, who's normally cut out of the play.
Okay.
Because he's kind of whiny. And
but a terribly important character.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out how you would cut him out, like, and have anything.
I'm not
really
sure
sense.
How that works.
Yeah, but yeah, well, the director writing it along, and she made a point to tell me, by the way, we normally cut this character out, and I'm like, okay, fuck you. Actually, we got into a lot of fights, but so it was set in Japan, so she cast an actual Asian girl. Woman, I don't call it college girl. I don't know what you would call her.
Young woman.
A young woman of Asian descent as mm-hmm. Lady Macbeth, and then like a Jewish guy as Macbeth with a lot of makeup. So yeah, that probably wasn't cool. But anyway, we all had a lot of makeup on. It looked awesome. We did like shadow, Budokan, that whatever that sword is. That's from Macbeth.
I'm not gonna turn my head.
It's a wooden practice sword. Whatever you
okay.
call that.
Sure.
So
Kento, Kenpo, or something.
Kenpo,
like that?
Yeah, it might have been Kenpo. So, Sam Chan played Lady Macbeth. Beautiful girl, lovely in every way. We hit it off, just friendly. And she ended up transferring out of Geneseo and went to RIT. I think her mm-hmm. father was a professor there. So she invited me to a party, like, a
oh,
year
okay.
later.
Okay. So we're not talking about Macbeth anymore now.
No, I'm just explaining the connection.
Right.
So I could get...
I'm sorry.
It's twists.
My hopes were
twists
up.
And turns. I'm sorry.
Because, you know, I'm a theater guy. I was looking for a Macbeth story here.
Oh, we had a ton of cursed Macbeth shit happen. We had... three, the only show I've ever been in that had, we had to stop the show, and we had to stop it two or three times.
Like during a performance?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. This is good. That's good.
We had, you know, it might have, okay, I'm sorry. It might have only been one night that we actually stopped the performance, but we had issues the other two nights. So
say we closed it down like every night except one.
We closed it down every night except one because a submarine klaxon that was the fire alarm went off. It was a fire alarm somewhere in the building. So we had to shuffle out. The other two nights we had a bat and we would be performing and it would swoop by your fucking face.
And that's cool.
Trying to recite Shakespeare while a bat's fucking inches from you and you're in a full samurai.
Work with it. Use it. Use the environment to your advantage.
You know what? Fuck you. I want you to go on stage and I want you to be like, blah, blah, blah. Oh my God, it's a bat in my face.
I like bats.
Yeah, well, you're weird. Anyway, I went to this party. I didn't know what to expect, but I was kind of hoping to, you know, talk to my friend and I'm just having to rescue her. So she had all these RIT guys. So I walk in and it's tall, pasty, beanpole central. Right? Mm-hmm. It's RIT.
Yeah.
And I was chatting with her and then I walked away and then I look over and she's giving me that save me look. And some guy, I can hear from across the room, this guy is very excitedly telling her about his double ball bearing 90 millimeter case fan. like proudly, it's lit up.
90 millimeter? That's, I'm not impressed.
Well, it was, you know, 2002.
I guess.
Maybe it was big back then. Very, very excited to tell her about this. And she was not into that shit at all. So, like, I kind of did that thing. I was like, all right. So I kind of swooped in. I'm like, hey, Sam, how's it going? Hey, dude, I heard about your case fan. Tell me, did you build your own rig? And I did the whole, like, arm on the shoulder, guide him away. And she kind of did that. Nice. And just, like, ran away. And that was the last time I saw her. Like, ever.
Aw.
Anyway, that's my RIT story. What's yours?
It's not even that good. It was, it was weird because one... This was pretty soon after I'd moved here.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not living by myself. I'm living with my girlfriend at the time, now wife.
Okay.
And I was just looking for something to do. I've got a newly, probably updated video card in my rig.
That's all you need.
Yeah. I think it's a new rig. I wouldn't have gone otherwise. And I was looking. I found out about that there was a LAN party at RIT. And it was open. It wasn't just... All right.
But you didn't know anyone.
I didn't know anyone.
Wow.
But I didn't really know anyone anyway around here.
Oh, that's true.
So I hadn't lived here for very long. So I thought, you know what? I'll be social. I'll go out to this LAN party.
I'll be social at a LAN party.
Yeah. It was all right. It was interesting. I didn't go to another one. It wasn't that exciting. And it was a bunch of, you know, it was what you would expect. There was mostly RIT students. I was certainly the oldest one there, which was a little uncomfortable.
Probably in your, what, late 30s?
Early, mid-30s.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what?
I was too old to be going to a LAN party to college.
There is someone listening who does not know what a LAN party is. Why don't you paint a picture? Paint a picture of a LAN party. Because they are something everyone should like experience at least secondhand.
Do they even do them that often anymore? Are they still a thing?
They're a throwback thing. I went to one a couple years ago, but yeah, they're really unnecessary at this point.
They are.
But there's something to be said about getting a bunch of nerds in a room with a ton of pizza, a ton of do.
Yeah.
And games.
We should do that. We should do that.
Okay. Say the word. That weighs 70 pounds.
Well, yeah. We could have it. Anyway, I have something you could hook that up to and carry it with.
Oh.
It's like a thing that wraps around your...
I mean, it's on a cart, I guess. But anyway, go on.
It's got handles. Anyway, LAN party is a local access network party. It's where a bunch of nerds bring their own computers... various quality rigs or maybe even gaming laptops and get all either in one big room or in one house, even in different rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And you all play like the same game, a multiplayer game. Back when I was playing,
you all play a single player game.
Nah, that was, that would be terrible. That would be so sad. Why would you do that? The big game that I was playing when I went to the LAN party...
Wait, let me guess. What year is it?
Oh, geez, it would have been early aughts, like 2001, 2002.
StarCraft.
No.
Warcraft.
No.
Counter-Strike.
No. Some people were probably playing that, but that was a little old by then.
I give up.
Battlefield.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Battlefield 1942 with the Modern Warfare
mod.
Mm-hmm. Or Desert Combat. I forget what it was.
But it I think was it was Desert Combat.
It was Desert Combat, probably, yeah. And that was a big thing. Battlefield 1942 was one of the first games that really took off for modding.
Mm,
it was
you're
a very
right.
open mod community. People would take the game engine, and I guess it was to some extent open source, and come up with their own vehicles, their own games, and they would just overlay it. Overlay the base game with their own skins and tweak the rules of things.
Tweak the physics. Tweak
everything. So they're taking a World War II
simulator. Simulator is a very loose.
Yeah, that's a very loose and fast
World
term.
War II massive arcade
shooting,
game.
Yeah. Any gamer, you can hop in a battleship and steer it around and shoot things while you're steering the battleship. It's really not very simulating.
But someone did explain this to me once. There is arcade and there is simulation. That is
definitely
the binary delineation. Arcade is silly, over the top, gamey.
Simulation but it wasn't. It was kind of walking between because there was there was a little bit of
you
real,
could walk away from a plane crash though, couldn't you?
You could jump out and have a parachute.
I don't know.
Like the 9 key was the parachute.
Well, weren't you also a bullet sponge? I mean, one shot didn't kill you.
One shot didn't kill you unless it was you could get killed by a headshot, I think.
Well, yeah. All right, anyway.
It was a lot more realistic than like Doom or something.
Yeah, I just got
not even close. So they had overlaid a modern desert combat engine over it.
Because that wasn't that long after Desert Storm.
Yeah, it was right after this. And that was all the hot stuff, and you could have, you know, your APCs and your whatever that the Abrams tanks and Jeeps with the Humvees with guns on them. The best vehicle that they added to it were these Scud launchers.
Like mobile?
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, you would have to be on the I guess you could be on either side, because either side, if they found a vehicle, they could jump in it and take off, no matter whose vehicle it is. Not realistic, but fun. So
again, arcade.
Yeah. So if you were on the Iraqi or whatever bad guy side, non-NATO, non-US side, one of the vehicles that spawned there was a giant Scud missile launcher.
Game over, man. Game over.
So the trick was, because they're a little bit, they're not very fast.
Right.
So you'd have to like sneak it around and get within a decent range of where the allies keep spawning.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like their main base with all their vehicles in it. And it was hard to aim. You really just have to get lucky with it. But once you got it and you launched the missile and it just blew everything up, it was a good feeling. That's all I'm going to say. So however, being the 30-year-old guy at a bunch of with a bunch of RAT kid nerds was not the best feeling.
I can imagine.
But it was still all right. It was an experience.
Yeah, you're telling stories about it.
Not really. Everybody was drinking Red Bull. It had sponsors, which was kind of weird to me.
RAT is a weird place.
Yeah, I think it was either Red Bull or Monster. Maybe it was Monster. Was to some extent sponsoring them. And they were like giving away some freebie stuff.
Yeah, everyone likes the freebies. We should, you know what we should do? He's in New York right now, but if we ever get him up, we should have Andrew on to talk about the whole esports thing.
Okay.
Because, I mean, he's like leading the charge to make it a collegiate level. But I mean, they have money and they're living in a luxury New York like complex right now. I get part of it. But I think that'd be interesting because, like, if you know, for those who are listening, if you're not familiar, esports is basically the LAN party scene, taken to a financially lucrative, potentially, you know, professional level.
Yes,
where people play 10 or 12 hours a day as a team to hone their skills as a team and then compete against the people around the world.
Yeah, which is a little ridiculous.
It's bizarre.
I'll get into my other story here. Not much of a story, but. Around the same time, I was actually on a team. not, you know, not a local team.
A geographically disparate team.
Yes, a geographically disparate team that would play unmodded Battlefield 1942 as a team against other teams.
Hmm. Were you guys any good?
Yeah, we were decent. It was a really cool experience, though. And it was cool because we would practice. Mm-hmm. We would have, like, scheduled meets against mm-hmm. other teams. We would know what the maps were and who side we were going to be playing, so we would take a look at the map we'd strategize and have practices, and a lot of that kind of went to hell once the game started, but but it was a cool experience because a lot of times when you're playing these, you just jump online, it's chaos.
Oh yeah.
It's ridiculous. Everybody wants to be a sniper.
You're shot by a 13-year-old who may or may not come teabag your corpse before you respawn. Yeah, that's my experience with online gaming.
Yeah, so playing on an organized team against another organized team was a very cool experience. And if you got a little time to try something like that and you're interested, I would recommend it.
I've dabbled in that. The only MMO I ever played was City of Heroes, because being a superhero sounded really cool. And like, if you play long enough, you tend to just collect people that you, mm-hmm. you run into again. You tend to play at the same time, and you'll spawn in the same area, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. You sort of kind of build that. So like, I do have a memory of like a group of us that I sort of just played with loosely a couple times. We all happened to meet up, and we're like, hey, let's go run, do this run. And it was cool because like some of them can fly. I could jump really far. So I had that moment of like leaping like over buildings. Like as a team, we were going to the point to do the run. And I was like, this is kind of cool. You know, all right, I'm down with this. And I was living alone in Queens, like in my friend's basement. Like it was good at that time. But then like on my free trial right now, and I'm like, I'm not going to fucking pay for this. This will never catch on.
All right, so what did I bring here? I'm going to turn the other way.
You're being really weird about this, dude.
It's not that weird. I got two of these. I just happen to have.
Should I not look?
You can look.
Okay.
So the year is... What is the year? The year is 2003. These are newer than I thought. So I would have bought these when I was living here. I thought these were older. Got a couple of gamer magazines. This is a premiere issue from 2003.
GMR. Wait, isn't that the stupid...
Probably. It's probably the stupid something.
The GameStop one?
It could be. That might be why I have them, because they were given away for free.
Yeah. I think Gamer was GameStop's promotional. Like, every game has a weirdly good review because they want you to buy them from them.
You're probably right.
And of course, the first
these
issue...
are now less exciting than I thought they would be.
No, I'm sorry.
I just sort of grabbed them at random.
But I do notice that the first thing they're doing is Dead or Alive Extreme
the,
Beach Volleyball.
The Beach Ball.
The TNA game.
Yeah. What... That was a thing. So
every stereotype about gamers was alive and well in the early aughts. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, so DOA, Dead or Alive, was actually a decent fighting game. Mm-hmm. It came out on, the original PlayStation.
I think it was on both. I think it was on Xbox, too.
What do you mean, Sega?
What?
You mean Sega?
Oh, no, you're right. It was a Saturn game, wasn't it?
You're probably right. I think it was on PlayStation and Saturn.
So the Xbox was PS2. It was that generation, right?
No, Xbox was PS3.
No, that's Xbox PS2? 360.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
Xbox
right.
Xbox was
right.
PS2. Xbox 360 was PS3. Okay. Again, all these generations are stupid. But yeah, so you had the early like internet capabilities very early on. The Saturn was the first
fighting
one
games played over the internet back then. No,
because they have to be extremely responsive and
And there was a lot of latency.
Everyone was using dial up.
It was awful.
But it was a pretty solid fighting game. It was also had some really great jiggle physics.
Yes, and that. It became more famous or infamous for that, I think, than anything else.
It wasn't on par with, like, Night Trap. But, it had some really good jiggle. I'm just staring at the cleavage on the cover because I'm a male. And that's
because you're
my,
supposed to.
Yeah, that's what my eyes are drawn to.
The character's leaning forward with a bikini on.
Look, why does she have her mouth open like that?
Sometimes women talk.
That is not a face that is talking. I'm just saying, that is intentionally...
Okay, it's a poorly rendered face. I'll give you that. So, man, and there's Devil May Cry 2 on the back. Devil May Cry was a good game.
You know the funny story about how that came to be, right?
No, but please, Please tell me.
Oh, I will be happy. Do you remember Onimusha?
Yeah.
Great game.
Yeah.
Until the third one.
I still have that, yeah.
Tried to bring Jean Reno into it to try to sell it in Europe.
They brought what?
Jean Reno, you know, the
person. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
They put him in the game purely to sell it better in Europe.
That's why?
Yeah, they were very open about it, and it did not work. Weird. Anyway, there was a bug. So the same guy created both games, Onimusha and Devil May Cry. There was a bug early on in development of Onimusha where he hit one of the demons up in the air and then managed to keep it stuck in the air by juggling it with a sword over and over again. And I guess the story is, like, he's like, this would be really cool if you could do this as, like, you could build a game around this. That's where Devil May Cry came from.
And juggling is in everything now.
Is it?
Well, it was for a while.
I feel like it had its heyday.
The juggle physics were
like bullet time. Everywhere. Bullet time post Matrix, thanks to Max Payne, actually was everywhere, and then it kind of died down again. Ugh. So these are vintage gamers.
Yeah, not even that vintage. I was thinking these were going back to the 90s, but they're not. Crash Bandicoot on Game Boy Advance. When did that happen?
So there's TNA on the cover. There's TNA.
Really young looking TNA.
Yeah, that's kind of awkward.
Yeah, and there's a little girl there.
So Crash Bandicoot was Naughty Dog. And
yes, they make Naughty the Uncharted Dog Studios. Games.
So I just played the first level of the first Crash Bandicoot in Uncharted. It's really cute. Like Nathan's talking to his wife, and he's like, "Oh, let me try to beat you in this game that you play."
So like, it's a game that you can actually just play Crash Bandicoot.
But it's just like one scene, and you're only playing one level, but it's still funny.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Because she's totally smack talking him the whole time.
Yep, here it is. Yeah, this is their premiere issue, and there's the
EB Games. Oh, back when they were EB Games, yeah.
Wait, what are they now?
GameStop. They merged.
Oh, so it's just GameStop. Okay.
Just only GameStop now, yeah.
There's only GameStop.
Yeah, like 10 years ago.
Yeah, because it used to be EB Games and GameStop and Software USA. That was the third one.
Never saw Software USA.
No, I think that's right.
Game Craze is still around.
Yeah, they're more local. Mm-hmm. Any good memories here? Again, I really thought this was going back to the 90s.
I'm sorry.
I should have looked more carefully.
Is that Britney Spears?
I think
that's a digitally rendered Britney Spears?
I don't know. So, this is even before... This is the first issue of the magazine, and they're already running...
Corrections?
Letters to the editors, I guess. I don't know how that works. I'm highly suspect of the origin of these reader questions.
Dear Gamer Magazine, why are you guys so great? Why are your reviews so completely trustworthy? I buy all the games that you
review. Oh, and here it is. Here it is. The very first question. I don't know if this is a question or editorial comment. How does a magazine that's never had an issue on the street generate mail?
Well, they're addressing it right off the bat.
We considered stealing some of EGM's mail, Electronic Gaming Monthly.
That was the magazine back in the day.
But eventually settled on putting the call out on gamers.com, our online chill spot.
Wow. That's a 40-year-old trying to sound cool if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, this is all very early internet days. Not that early. This is like a few years into the internet. This is dot-com boom time.
Yep. Before the bubble burst.
Not our website, but our online chill spot. That sounds dirty.
We have a digital frond.
Yeah. You responded in droves. Here's a little sampling.
Now they'd say you responded with drones.
Let me find a good one here. Does GMR stand for Gaming Monthly Reviewer or something like that? Actually, it doesn't stand for anything. It's a contraction of gamer.
Whoa, mind
gamer.
Blown.
Gamer. Get it? Good. What sets gamer apart? First off, congrats on the new magazine. I view your entrance into this field as just another sign of how healthy the video game industry is. To your prospective readers, how do you feel you will distinguish yourself from EGM or CGW other than the fact you will be covering all platforms, including PC, in one place? Perhaps a top 10 list response a la Letterman is in order. Wow.
That's a PC gamer, definitely.
That's an employee. That's an employee. That's not real.
Let me underhand this to you.
Yay, list is the response. Yay, list. We love lists. The top 10 ways gamer is different from It's Sister Gaming Pubs at Ziff Davis.
Yeah, Ziff Davis had all of the gaming publications. I guess so.
Number 10, 40% fewer morons. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
I want to slap you, and that's not even your fault.
I know.
You're reading it.
Number 9, we've got an insane Englishman at the helm. Oh, wait, so does OPM, Official PlayStation
Official
Magazine.
Official PlayStation Magazine, yep.
All right. Our area in the Ziff offices has a permeating minty smell.
This isn't Ziff Davis, smell. Though, is it? That's weird.
I don't know. Number 7, we're spicy but nice. 5, we only do mental. Number 4, when angered, our art director turns into the Incredible Hulk. This is terrible!
These are return to sender.
Number 3, we can drink any of the other mags under the table. Number 2, maybe it's the base. Number 1, it must be the shoes.
So none of these in any way...
Nike advertising.
Yeah, I think there's a shoe right there, too.
Jeez. This is awful. This is terrible writing. I'm trying to find anything of any decent value in here. All right, taking this back in time. Game Report, Arrival's coming soon. This is what we were looking for back in 2003. Impossible Creatures? I don't even remember that. Dot Hack.
Wow. I remember Dot Hack, yeah.
Yeah. Battlefield 1942, The Road to Rome, which, coincidentally, I was playing at that. That's not really a coincidence because I was...
That was the really hot game at the time. So not coincidentally.
Command and Conquer Generals, Evil Twin, Final Fantasy XI, Indiana Jones and the Emperor's Tomb. I don't remember anything about that.
I remember that it was a game, but I didn't read it or I didn't play it.
Tomb Raider, The Angel of Darkness?
Yep, that's when Tomb Raider shit the bed.
Yeah, this is not a good... Midnight Club 2.
Is that racing?
Racing
Street
game?
Racing.
Super Puzzle Fighter 2. Now, that was a good game. No, I'm serious. That was a great game.
You would say that.
Did you play that?
No.
It was
I played Puzzle Strike.
Okay. Not quite the same, but very closely related.
in board game.
Super Puzzle Fighter. Was it Super Puzzle Fighter?
It was like Tetris meets Street Fighter.
Yeah, but it was more, if this means anything to you, like that Mario...
Dr. Mario. Game,
Dr. Mario yep. meets Street Fighter. So it was one-on-one Dr. Mario.
Right. This is what I was talking about, by the way. So they put their used game prices in the magazine.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Back when used games actually were worth buying. Unlike now, when if you go and buy a used game at GameStop, it's $5 cheaper than buying a brand new one. And they give you like $20 in trade-in. There is no reason to trade games to them. They are fucking horrible.
Yeah, and that was that's been like a big point of bone of contention within the industry because EB Games, Electronics Boutique and GameStop now have made so much money just selling the same games over and over.
Yep.
And when they do that, unless they've changed things within the past few years, the original game creator or publisher.
Gets, usually the publisher.
Gets none of that.
They were going to head that off by... Sorry, I'm actually reading this magazine. They were going to head that off by actually not allowing pre-owned games to work on the latest console generation. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and they did that on a lot of PC games for a while.
That's still the case. You still need an original license.
Yeah.
I mean, PC has never had that problem.
Yeah.
But with the consoles, for the PS4 and the Xbox One, they were, for a year beforehand, they were trying to get people ready. They're like, listen, you can't play pre-owned games on this. And everyone's like, you can't fucking do that. That's one of the biggest advantages of the console games. So they did eventually relent. But now what they do is the way that they've tried to head that off is when you buy a game, you get a one-time use code for a bunch of bonus stuff.
Yes.
And so you can't get the bonus stuff unless you buy another code.
Mm-hmm.
Which, maybe that works. I generally don't give a shit and generally don't notice a difference in the game with or without the bonus. Like, sometimes I'll forget to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like,
Anything else good here? Tenchu Wrath of Heaven. I didn't even recognize some of these.
Well, remember, they're trying to sell games, so they're putting everything in there.
Yeah. Steel Battalion?
Oh, yeah.
It's an Xbox game. I never played that.
Isn't that the 40 button?
No, I think that was something else. Maybe.
Let me see.
It's only Xbox. I thought that was for a different
console.
No, it
was Xbox only.
Okay. Then that is that game.
Where do you see it?
Right there.
Gratuitous? Sure. That's what it says. It's got to be it.
It's got to be it. Okay.
Oh, Xenosaga. I could not fucking tell you what that game is about. It was really, really intellectual and heady, but I could not tell you what that game was about.
Was it? Was that a sequel to Xenogears?
Yes.
Okay. Because I never finished Xenogears.
Xenogears was like about God and shit.
Yeah, I never got that far into it.
It was like, there was the Japanese reading too much like Kierkegaard. Like, he's like, what is this game about? This is slow and boring, and they're talking about religion a lot. What is going on?
And the game got pretty slow and boring. And I was into the JRPGs, but it was
that was
obnoxious.
That was a brutal JRPG, because yeah. JRPGs are slow to begin with, and that was like chugga 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 nope chugga chugga.
And it was also one of these things, and I really dislike this mechanic. I dislike it intensely in JRPGs, Japanese role-playing games, for anybody out there
noobs.
Who doesn't know what that is.
Listenership of dozen.
So at some point, and I don't think Xenogears was the first, but it was definitely one of them.
Mm-hmm.
JRPGs used to be like Final Fantasy, the old Final Fantasy games, and it was turn-based when you were actually fighting. So you could, you know, have it about to hit somebody with a sword and like, I'm going to go make a sandwich right now.
Right.
And it's fine.
And then they kind of stand there and do this weird,
yeah,
like, kind of dance in place.
The music's playing.
Yep. And they're really pumped up for like 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. It's a game that you could fight.
Erica
and then
hates
you could
that.
Go somewhere else.
Erica hates that.
You weren't pressured there.
Well, you could strategize. You could go through like
could.
15 submenus and be like, I want to use this obscure attack because I feel like I can chain it with someone else and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
That was the joy of those games.
And you would set up, okay, I want you to do this, you to do this, and then you do this, and this last person's going to do this.
And you could
and
usually
go.
See who was going to go in what order. So be like, okay, I get two of my guys get a turn, and then the enemy gets a turn. It's like, okay, bang, bang, bang. Yeah, got it. Okay.
It's fine.
Done.
So at some point, somebody was like, you know what? This is too boring. We need to spice this up.
Yep.
We need to say that if you hit this button right when your character is swinging a sword,
oh,
it'll do more damage.
Yeah, the quick time shit.
I think that was Xenogears was one of the ones that did that.
I think you're right.
It had like
it definitely
weird
was the only one.
Combo stuff in it. There was you had to pay more attention when your guys are fighting.
Yep.
And it's just work.
I'm one of those people who used to skip the full motion video animations of summons in Final Fantasy. So I get that sometimes they're a bit gratuitous and boring.
Yes.
But yeah, having to like actively pay attention to what is still
especially
a strategy
like,
battle.
Like, Meteor Ultima or whatever.
Oh my God. Knights of the Round? Fucking 13 knights attacking shit? Shit took forever. Ah, JRPGs.
Although they were pretty... If you really think about them when you're watching them, And Ultima, I think, is the meteor one, right?
In 7, yes. Yeah.
It's such an absurd attack. You're basically calling down a comet.
A heavenly body is crashing into the planet right in front of you to kill, like, a blood-soaked rabbit. Like, it never made sense for what you were doing. Never. And the global implications. I mean, really, no one ever thought about
it's
this.
It's so irresponsible.
Well, what about the one, I don't know if it was 7 or 8, where you like would summon, I think it was called Alexander, and it was a city that rose out of the ground on a dude's head. Like, this guy was that big. Just try to imagine. It's a full-blown city on a dude's head. He was so big. And he'd like stand up and smack something. You are standing right next to this motherfucker as he comes out of the ground. Where are you? You're not still standing there, dude. I'm sorry. No way. The summons were prosterone-y. They just... And then what was so funny is that in like 7, Final Fantasy 7, and this was the thing about JRPGs were excessive in their like attacks, right? To the point where the final boss wasn't the hardest thing in the game.
Yeah.
Like, so what you would do is you didn't spend all this extra time getting these other attacks that were just too powerful. They break the game because you need them to fight these other optional monsters and bosses that... were completely unnecessary to fight, other than you could brag to your friends that you did it.
Yes.
So you there was like a whole sub game there that was just entirely time suck.
Yeah.
Of course, I did a lot of them.
did you get the flying chocobo or whatever?
The gold
you
chocobo? Must have,
yeah.
I bred the shit out of those motherfuckers. You couldn't get Knights of the Round without it. You can't land an airship on a tiny little island with no grass. Come on, Smike. You need a gold chocobo. You need to be able to cross oceans and mountains on one thing.
Yeah. I didn't do that. I'd heard about that. That was how you would... To get this one spell, which was completely unnecessary to the game.
It was ridiculous. You would beat the last boss with, you like, would, one use.
You would have to, like, go through this rigorous...
You had to basically...
Breeding program.
You had to live Seabiscuit. You had to fucking reenact Seabiscuit in a fantasy setting. You had to become... A chocobos are basically bird horses. So yes, you had to
race them. There was a racing
and breed
game.
Within
the game itself, there was a racing sub.
And it was a steampunk game, so there it looks like a fucking, you know, track, like a horse track, like in real life. So you are like managing, buying eggs, breeding chocobos, racing them. You're riding them too, so you're your own jockey. So you are living Seabiscuit with the hope of getting the right combination of genetic strains in your chocobos, you can breed them into the fabled gold chocobo, which would win the last race.
The Bene Gesserit of chocobo training. Yes,
the enfant terrible. But what it could then do was, see, the black chocobos could cross mountains and the blue chocobos could cross the ocean, I think.
Yeah.
But you needed both because there was this one island in the middle of the ocean that everyone knew about. It was tiny. You couldn't land your airship there because there was no grass. So it was a little cave surrounded by mountains. And the only way to get to it...
It taunted you.
Yeah. Oh.
Throughout the game. You're like, absolutely. I can see... How can I get to this thing?
You keep trying to land the airship and it's like... Eh, 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 and you're like, how do I get this thing that I want for no reason? Oh my God, that game. That was the game. That was the most excessive time spent on a game. Even Witcher 3, a massive open world game, I don't think I spent as much time playing as I did Final Fantasy VII. And I did not do all the secrets. I think Ben did more secrets than I did. But that was a random game. Like, you end up in a love train at one point.
A love train?
Yeah, did you?
I don't remember that.
It was like, you had to stumble into it. You had to do some random shit in a certain order, but you ended up in a bathhouse with a bunch of dudes in a circle.
That sounds really familiar.
Everyone thought it was really funny or disturbing, depending on which camp.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was totally like, oh, I'm in a Japanese love train right now. Okay. But everything was really blocky, so you couldn't quite tell.
Yeah.
So you could convince yourself, like, okay, whatever. This is fine. Meanwhile, I think there's a condom machine right outside. I really did not know what I was walking. Literally did not know what I was walking into. Oh, gaming. It's changed. I've changed.
It has changed. So now you're playing Xbox or XCOM 2.
No, that's going to wait. I am 2 months away from my monitor upgrade. Yeah.
You have a huge monitor right here.
Yeah.
What is the refresh rate not good enough?
Yes, that is part of it.
Okay.
I need G-Sync. I need a better refresh rate. I need a different... something else, too. I'll show you when I get it.
All right.
I've been scrimping and saving all of my pennies, all of my Amazon dollars. I have a little, like, extra fund now for the non-existent extra money that I have. Actually, because I picked up some contractor work, I do have a little extra money, so I'm feeding
into
that.
Oh, you do? Yeah.
So I'm going to get, hopefully...
You're teaching old guys how to use the internet.
No, not anymore. That,
no?
That same customer, I am managing the social media campaign. I actually cut this out.
So you're teaching old people how to use Facebook.
I did have a call tonight with him on how to log into Twitter on his phone. So yes. But I cut this out of the other podcast. I left it in because it was so over time.
Okay.
But he wrote a book. It's about his, you know, struggles with, it's right there. It's struggles with addiction and mood disorder. And he just wants to get it out there. He doesn't really want to make a profit on it. He'd like to make the thousand money back on it because he put a lot of his own money into it. So he, you know, I said, well, you know, how are you promoting it? And he goes, my website. And I'm like, how are you driving people to your website? And he goes, I'm not. So we have this multifaceted, like, YouTube, Google Plus, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr. I have all this stuff put together. It's all like auto posts and reposts and tweets and retweets and shit. So he's really happy with all the work I've done, and it gives me a little bit extra money for the, you know, raise that I didn't really get.
So this is all stuff that like any 11-year-old would instinctively know how to do.
Instinctively know how to do? Yes. Be able to calmly and patiently explain to a 76-year-old? Not a fucking chance. And that's why I win. Because before I was a trainer professionally, I was teaching old people very patiently how to use very basic stuff. That not everyone can do. And I know it doesn't seem like I'd be able to do it, but I can.
I know you can turn on the charm when you need to.
It's not charm. It's just genuinely saying, okay, I understand that this is all alien to you. You lived in a time when, you know, the internet wasn't even a whisper in the mouths of children. I was trying to come up with something better than that. It didn't come.
No.
Nope. But anyway, yeah, there'll be a very impressive edition in about 2 months. You'll be staring at it as we podcast, I can assure you.
All right. Well, I'm sorry these magazines were such a disappointment. That's okay. I thought I was going back to like some old electronic gamings or something.
It's okay. I mean, we might have been really horrified by how stupid shit was back then.
Back then, you needed the magazines.
Oh, yeah.
They were much more important back then.
Game design.
Because there was no internet.
Well, okay, yes. But, and I've only realized this in later years. Part of that is because game design has come a long way. Like, when you think, so I recently read like a list of the worst games ever. And a lot of the games that I thought I was really bad at was on that list. And it made me feel a lot better. Like Friday the 13th. You ever play Friday the 13th?
I don't know. Maybe.
The game like makes no fucking sense.
Is that the one with the mask or is that a different one?
Jason?
No, the one where you put on the mask or is that the one where you're fighting Jason?
If you fight him, you usually die. But
okay.
But yeah, you're walking around Crystal Lake Campground. It was like the Goonies game where it was like kind of weirdly letterboxed and you didn't really play a lot. It was kind of...
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought I was just really bad at the game, but it's like, everyone was like, no, this is one of the worst made games ever. This is up there with E.T. for just really bad game design. And I've only realized recently that it's like, oh, okay. Some people just made shitty games.
Yes.
And if you didn't have the magazine to figure them out, there was really no way to play them because they weren't intuitive at all.
Right. We needed the magazine for reviews. Mm-hmm. We needed the magazine when... I remember when Street Fighter 2 came out.
Okay.
And the people who knew how to throw a fireball were like gods.
The Hadouken was tricky.
You're like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And if they could pull off a dragon punch, it was like, oh my God, what did you just do? How did that happen?
Because there
happen?
Was no precedent for combos back then.
There
that was
wasn't.
Just an unheard of thing.
For special moves, yeah. There was nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
they do it so fast, you couldn't even watch and see what they did. It just wasn't...
Yeah. And especially if they weren't nice enough to tell you this is what you do.
You roll the...
It was a big mystery.
Yep. And then you do it yourself by accident and be like, how the fuck did I do that? And you try to recreate it. You ever have that moment?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I just did it! Shit!
Yeah. Like, I even remember that. Like, the first time I did a Sonic kick with Guile. Like, what did I just do? Oh, was it good?
Wasn't it just down, hold down, then
it was, yeah, it was really pretty simple.
But again, there was no precedent for that kind of stuff. It was nothing. Yeah. No, I remember I loved Guile because...
Oh, yeah. Guile was awesome.
His special moves were simpler to execute. Because, like, the Sonic punch, like, backhand thing was just hold back and then forward and punch. His Sonic kick was hold down and press up and kick.
Yes.
So there was a simplicity to them.
He did that. He had his two-kick roundhouse thing.
Mm-hmm. But he was weak. That was the problem. His moves were easier.
He was a little weak.
But he was weaker.
But he was like the best turtle.
The best turtle?
Yeah. You wait for the... You just sort of wait defensively for somebody else to come at you.
Oh, yeah. He did the shoulders up thing and then...
Yeah. And then somebody would come or they would jump and you do a flash kick or whatever it is. Yep. And
then you could... Well, people said he was cheese ball because you could shoot stuff. But Vega was kind of...
He was pretty cheeseball because he could shoot a really slow sonic boom.
Yeah, it was bigger.
And
right?
then chase that.
Yeah.
And right. then he could do the same jump with either a small kick or a small punch and come down and just start punching. Punch. Okay, that was really nerdy. Wow. I am even disgusted at myself.
But there's...
But you need the magazines to know to find out how all those moves work, because the magazines would publish Here's all the special moves for all the characters.
They do special moves lists. They do. They pick a big game and they do a strategy guide, and you learn all the secrets that there was like a pixel hunt. Otherwise, you never find them.
Yes.
I mean, Nintendo Power. Jesus, if you didn't have Nintendo Power, you weren't playing a game fully back then. Like, it was awful how in the pocket the games were to that magazine. They had so much pull, and now there's the internet. It's weird that Prima.
It's weird there's still magazines at all.
Well, so Prima, who was the strategy guide company, they published all of the strategy guides when they became their own standalone thing, like, will publish strategy guides online now.
And well, they have to because they change all the time.
Well, no, but I just mean, how are they making money? Like,
oh, I don't
what's
know.
Their, do they have ads?
Advertising or something.
I never even go to their page. I just go to GameFAQs.
Yeah, like, I know.
You know what?
Now there's GameFAQs.
Listen, dude, nah. Some 11-year-old devoted 80 hours of their life writing a fucking webpage with like ASCII like fonts to make the images.
You said ASCII.
Is that what it is?
It's ASCII.
But I wasn't even sure if that was the right thing, so I was spelling it out. Okay. But I know, honestly, I don't know. So it's ASCII?
Just ASCII, yeah.
ASCII. All right.
Wow.
Sorry. I'm not that much of a nerd.
You're not that old of a nerd, you mean?
Yeah, I'm not. I missed the computer boom. I didn't have AOL. So, like, Ben had it, and I was... We should ask Ben sometime about the stupid questions I used to ask him. Because I'd be like, so are the megabytes going to run out? Or, like, do you have enough RAMs? I was that guy. Like, I remember we spent an entire evening downloading MechWarrior 2 over dial-up to play the demo. And then, like, I was just convinced I was going to break his computer. Because I was like, this is going so slow, something must be wrong. It's like, it's okay. It's normal. I'm like, I'm going to end up giving up.
Yeah, I remember even before those days, I was on like a 400 baud modem. It was really, really slow. And yeah, I would download games for my Atari computer.
Mm-hmm.
Completely illegal. I think the statute of limitations run out on this.
Yeah.
These were all pirated copies.
So there was pirating even back then.
Oh, yeah.
I remember seeing magazines where they would give you the entire code of a game.
Yes.
And you would you actually look at the magazine and type?
Yes.
Letter by letter, the code of the game?
Okay, yes.
They were pages and pages of just pure text.
Yes. Wow. Yes. And anytime I do data entry, that's what I think about. Because I did those. I got those magazines.
And then you'd have to debug them when they wouldn't work.
So, the ones I typed in, it was a compiling code.
Okay.
So you didn't actually type in the code. You just typed in lists and lists and lists of data.
Okay.
Just numbers. Mm-hmm. It was just numbers.
I wish people in listening could see your face. There's like a shell-shocked horror that you have perfectly captured. It's frozen right now. I mean,
you were literally just typing numbers nonstop.
So you were typing the matrix.
Row by row of
that's data what I remember seeing. Yeah. Numbers. I remember looking at this like not understanding what I was looking at.
You can't. You can't understand because it's not the actual code. And then that the numbers get
compiled and
become the code. And God help you if you screw up one of those numbers. You're just I don't know where.
Wouldn't you need
that
a
is.
Friend to like double check your work? Well, if you're doing that, you probably don't have a lot of friends. Never mind.
Correct on both counts, sir.
Low blow?
Well done. Well played. It was brutal. And yeah, I would spend nights doing that.
But once you got that working, what a sense of like ownership over the game.
Yeah. Yay. I typed in something that somebody else created.
No, but still, the amount of investment. Like, think about when you get a free anything. Like, when I get something for free, it never means that much to me.
And it was a big deal because it was essentially free, minus the cost of the magazine, which was probably cool anyway. But and it was a tremendous sense of accomplishment. And there were a couple of good games. They weren't great.
Nothing was great back then.
But they were free. And some of the things were great.
Zorg.
What?
Zark.
What?
Zorp.
What are you...
I don't know. Wasn't there a game with a Z everyone played?
Zork.
Zork. Zork.
Z-O-R-K.
I was close.
What
I was
the hell is
around.
Wrong with you?
I'm younger than you. I didn't play that game.
Zork was one of the best and one of the oldest.
I know. I know enough about gaming history to almost pull it off. I say ASCII and I say Zorp.
Oh, God. You wound me, sir.
Yeah, well, you wound me. I'm sure typing page upon page of numbers alone in your room wounded you more, so don't take it out on me, nerd.
This is the disgustingly nerdy episode.
Well, we've been dancing around the nerdism lately. We were due. Buddies in Space is a member of the Stolen Dress Entertainment Podcast Network. Visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books. Of course, check out all of the many entries in the Looking Forward saga of Jason Clamm for President 2020/2016. Check out Clint Westfall's Baroda on YouTube. New episode will be coming up, I think, by the time you listen to this podcast. Yeah, pretty sure. Things are starting to get heavy for Clint Westfall.
Ooh.
He may have taken his 30 pieces of silver.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that... Yeah.
I'm still not quite sure what it means. I'm guessing. I have just a loose, like, syllabus of what I'm doing. So I'm like, I really need to figure out exactly what this means.
Is he going to have to kill someone? Okay. Yeah, no spoilers. I understand. That's fine. That's fine. Just edit that right out.
I'm just going to leave it as it is. Yeah, we're at the hour mark.
So at the Fringe Festival in Toronto, which we talked about last time, there was, you were talking about Macbeth,
mm-hmm.
and one of the shows we went to was Weird, The Witches of Macbeth.
Like Weird as in W-Y?
Mm, no.
Okay.
But they're also referred to as the Weird Sisters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was... Have you ever seen...
We had Buteau dancers in ours as the weird.
Okay. Have you ever seen silk wire work? Not really wire work, but it's where you've got like a couple of pieces of like heavy duty silk mm-hmm. that come down.
And people like hang and dance off it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was that.
Oh.
But they took the three witch characters from Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
And they combined them with that aerial acrobatic stuff.
Double, somersault, and treble?
Yeah. They also expanded on the story and, like, added some of their... They wrote some new material for them.
What?
And it was all just from their perspective. It was kind of cool. It was interesting.
So it's like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. It's like it's from their perspective of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they, you know, they took a lot of the original material... And they added in what was going on with the witches in between the times when they met with Macbeth or
lots of else. Drinking. They're just drinking all the time.
Yeah. It was pretty interesting.
Hmm. Cool story, bro.
Yeah. For any Macbeth nerds out there, the premise was that the witches were trying to choose between, was it Duncan?
Malcolm?
Malcolm?
Well, Malcolm sent Duncan, so sure, Duncan.
Okay, between Duncan and Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, oh, Duncan's just this young guy, and Macbeth is, like, really old and cool and good at fighting. So, like, okay, we're going to go with Macbeth.
Bad call.
And that's how it turned out. And, like, things are starting to go to shit, and they're like, oh, we fucked that up.
Didn't take the wife into account.
Yeah.
Bad move, sisters.
So that's when they came up with the curse premonitions for him. The woods advancing on the castle. Right,
the hills of, or the woods, whatever comes to the hills of Dunsinane.
Yeah, and that he would be killed by a man who was not born a woman.
Woman
born.
I was from my mother's womb untimely ripped.
Yes. And what was there was a third one there too. But I know. But they came up with those things to curse him into fix the screw up that they'd caused earlier.
They caused a lot of screw up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's thrown to blood, did. he got a lot of arrows because of that. Oh, by the way, Mr. Robot season 2 started. Did you ever catch up?
No.
You really need to catch up. OMG.
I'm sorry.
Oh my God.
I'm sorry.
Oh my God. Anyone listening to this has not watched Mr. Robot yet, it's like everything that was amazing about Breaking Bad and nerdism at the same time. It's fucking amazing. He's not on drugs. That's gotta excite you.
You've ruined it now.
It happened in season 1. Oh, if okay. You'd watched it. We are buddies in space. You are...
S. Michael Smith. You are...
M. Michael Carassi. Why are we doing that?
I don't know. Okay.
You're kind of weird, you know that? Nerd, geek.